This free program is paid for by the listeners of WBAI New York. If you're not already a member, think about joining us to help keep free speech alive.
Oh, ettin şirkin, dünyayı kalıda bir gün kudu boyuna.
The Tale of the Flying Horse. The Padishah and the Effendi went hunting together. The sovereign and his guards were mounted on splendid beasts, while the Effendi followed them with difficulty on the old broken-down horse the Padishah had given him. When they reached the Gobi Desert, a few hours later, a terrible wind came up, and then rain began to pour. The Padishah and his guards turned and galloped back into the city, reaching it so soaked that it looked as though they had fallen into a river. The poor broken-down horse of the Effendi, hearing the thunder, stopped and would not move farther. Seeing that things were turning bad, the Effendi dismounted, took off his clothes, and put them under the saddle. When it stopped raining, he dressed again and calmly ambled back into the city as if nothing had happened. When the astonished Padishah saw him coming with his clothes completely dry, he exclaimed, "How is it that you're not wet? Where did you go during the rain?" The Effendi bowed and answered, "I will tell you, but first allow me to thank you. The horse you gave me was a flying horse. When you ran away, it was pouring. Then my horse soared into the sky and carried me to a beautiful garden. I had a very good time, but then I was afraid you would worry about me, and I came back." The Padishah listened to him, very envious of his good luck. So the next day, he again invited the Effendi to go hunting, but this time, as if by accident, he chose the old, broken-down horse for himself, and left the Effendi his own fine steed. They galloped for quite a while, and came again to the Gobi Desert. The hunting had just begun when, exactly as the day before, the wind began and the rain poured down. The Effendi whipped his horse and in no time arrived at the walls of the city, still dry. The broken-down horse, hearing the thunder, stopped and would not move farther. The Padishah used the whip, hit him with his fists, and kicked him, but the beast would not budge. The rain poured down heavier, and the Padishah went to bed that night with a good cold. An amusing story. So where does this story come from, you might ask? This story comes from Uyghurstan, otherwise known as East Turkestan, otherwise known as Xinjiang, or Xinjiang in the contemporary pronunciation. From the book The Effendi and the Pregnant Pot, Uyghur Folktales from China, as translated by Primrose Giglesi. Available from New World Press, Beijing. Copyright 1982. Now, you might wonder why we're reading Tales from Uyghurstan tonight. And those of you who follow the news will, in fact, be aware of why the Uyghurs, unfortunately, have been in the headlines of late. But first, I should also mention that we're also listening to Uyghur music tonight. This is by a young fellow by the name of Mamer from his first album entitled Eagle. It's available from Real World Records, which is Peter Gabriel's outfit out of the UK. And the liner notes inform us that over the last two decades, Mamer has established himself as one of China's most innovative and influential artists, drawing inspiration from the songs and poetry of the grasslands where he grew up. Mamer has influenced a generation of bands and musicians around China. Eagle features a repertoire of grassland songs, normally sung solo and accompanied by the simple two-stringed dombra. which he uses as well as 12-string guitar on this disc. Mahmer has arranged these songs and updated them for the 21st century, at the same time preserving their unaffected lyricism and often instructional lyrics. Mahmer was born in Katai County in China's northwestern Xinjiang province, some 2,000 miles from Beijing. He grew up in the furthest flung corner of Chinese Central Asia, near China's border with Russia and Kazakhstan. One of 10 children, Mahmer learnt the songs and instruments of the grasslands from his father and grandfather. His five-piece band was credited with single-handedly kickstarting China's alt-country scene, and Eagle is his first debut album. So, let's see. I've got some things to say about the current political tip, as well as a good number of folk tales I'd like to read from the Effendi and the Pregnant Pot. But I'll tell you what. Let's hear the next cut on this album is my favorite. So why don't we hear that and read another folk tale, and then I'll bring you up to speed a little bit, if you haven't been following the news, on what's been happening of late in Xinjiang or Uyghurstan.
Yeah.
The Soul of the Padishah. Talking with the Effendi one day, the Padishah asked him this question. Nasreddin, listen. When I die, will my soul go to heaven or hell? To hell for sure, replied the Effendi. I have finally reached this conclusion. The Padishah lost his temper. His eyes flashed, and he began a torrent of insults. But shadow of Allah, don't get so excited, interrupted the Effendi, trying to calm him down. It is the only possible conclusion, because you have killed so many people who deserve to go to heaven that the place is now too crowded to leave any room for you. Another tale of Effendi Nasreddin, known in China as Afanti, which is a Chinese corruption of Effendi. Which is a word of Arabic origin, an honorific. Let's see. And before that, we heard my favorite cut from the album Eagle by Mahmer. That one is entitled Proverbs. And it's definitely, it's got the most psychedelic feel of anything which is on the record. So if anybody out there can understand the Uyghur language and tell us what Mahmer is singing about, maybe you can be in touch with us. Leave me a message on my voicemail. I don't think we're going to take phone calls tonight. But leave a message on my voicemail, 212-631-1115, if you understand the Uyghur language and can tell us what Mahmer is singing about. Unfortunately, they don't translate the lyrics. Let's read another story. The gold plant. The Effendi borrowed a few grams of gold, then went to the city one morning on the back of his donkey. When he reached the desert, he got down, dug a hole, and began dropping the gold into it. Just then, the Padishah, as usual, passed by on his way hunting. Seeing the Effendi at this curious task, he said in astonishment, "Nasreddin, what the devil are you doing?" "Oh, your majesty, it's you. As you can see, I am planting a little gold." Even more astonished, the Padishah asked, "And after you have planted it, what will happen?" "Oh, nothing unusual," answered the Effendi. "Now I plant. On the fifth day, I will come for the harvest, which will be about 2 pounds, and then I will go back home." The eyes of the Padishah shone with greed. Such a little investment, he thought to himself, even less than it takes to buy a fat tail of mutton. Then, with a great smile, he said, "My dear Nasreddin, planting such a modest quantity of gold won't make you rich. You should plant a little more. If what you have is not enough, come to the palace to get some more. I will give you as much as you want. We will consider it as though we had planted together. When the gold grows up, you will give me only 80% of the harvest and keep all the rest." "All right, your majesty." The next day, the Effendi went to the palace of the Padishah and got 2 pounds of gold. 2 weeks later, he brought the Padishah more than 10 pounds. The Padishah opened his mouth in astonishment, and looking at the glittering metal, he got such pleasure that he couldn't shut it again. Then he ordered the guards to give the Effendi all the chests in the treasury. The Effendi took the gold back home and distributed it to the poor. 1 week later, with empty hands, a frown, and a sad expression, he went to the Padishah. When the sovereign saw that sad face, he grew pale with anger. Narrowing his eyes into slits, he asked, "Ah, you are back, and the ox cart and the ox carts with the golden sacks? They are also here? Your majesty, what a catastrophe!" The Effendi began to weep. "You have seen yourself. It hasn't rained a drop for days. So the gold dried up. All of it was lost. Not only the harvest, but even what I planted." Foaming with rage, the Padishah came down from the throne and began to swear, "Nonsense! Liar! Dried up gold! Who do you think you're fooling?" "All right, it seems strange to you," said the Effendi. "But if you can't believe that gold can dry up, how can you believe that it can grow?" The Padishah subsided as though someone had stuffed a gag in his mouth. Yes. All right. A little commentary about what we're reading here. These are folk tales of the Uyghurs, who are the traditional Turkic and Muslim people of China's far west, an area which they call Uyghurstan or East Turkestan, which the Chinese call Xinjiang, which actually translates as colonized territory. So you can imagine that the Uyghurs are not very happy about this. And that is, in fact, the tellingly, the name for the province, which dates back to the imperial era and has been kept intact under the communists. There were brief episodes of independence in the period of the warlords, in between the collapse of the Manchu dynasty and the 1949 revolution, when Muslim warlords seized control and declared their independence from China. And the tales of Effendi Nasreddin are, well, he's anti-authoritarian, he's irreverent, he's almost an anarchist, and he's always playing tricks on the Padishah, who is, you know, the local ruler from, old times, from medieval times. He's essentially the same character as Mullah Nasruddin, who comes to us from the Persian Sufi tales, which you can read in the works of Idris Shah. And I was able to find out, by the way, this is very interesting, poking around on the internet, I stumbled upon a blog called Tibeto Logic. And the blogger of Tibeto Logic states that he recently came across a couple of intriguing sources of information that could have to do with the historical identity of Tibet's counterpart of Effendi Nasreddin, Uncle Tampa. The two comic folk heroes might at first blush look different just because so many of the Uncle Tampa stories are unabashedly Eros-tinged and at times obscene to pornographic. But then it has been said that the Nasreddin stories were cleaned up and expurgated in the editing and publishing process. A few Uncle Tampa stories, like Uncle Tampa Sleeps with a Virgin, may be enjoyed after a simple schmoogle search, but really you have no choice but to beg, buy, or borrow Rinjing Dorje's Tales of Uncle Tampa, the Legendary Rascal of Tibet, available from Station Hill Arts, Barrytown, 1997. Otherwise, how could you possibly read that all-time favorite, Uncle Tampa Sells Penises at the Nunnery? hope I'm not violating any FCC regulations here. I'm just reading what it says on the website. So, if anybody out there has got a copy of the Uncle Tampa stories, and particularly Rinjing Dorje's Tales of Uncle Tampa, the Legendary Rascal of Tibet, please get in touch. So, and one wonders, I would imagine that even though Tibet is very isolated, it is right next door to Xinjiang. So I would imagine that probably the Tibetan Uncle Tampa, the Uyghur Effendi Nasreddin, and the Persian Mullah Nasruddin are all related. Certainly Effendi Nasreddin and Mullah Nasruddin are essentially the same character. Probably, although all I know is what I just read on this website, the Tibetan Uncle Tampa, although outside of the Islamic sphere, might also be related to the same cycle of folktales. Now, the interesting thing is that the Chinese authorities, printed this book, which I'm reading from, it was printed in Beijing in 1983, New World Press, because, it made convenient propaganda for the Communist Party. because, you know, Molinar's Rudin is standing up for the little guy against the Padishah, who represented, you know, the old order and the warlords. My question is whether, in fact, this book is still available in China today. This is my question, because one senses that perhaps the anti-authoritarian spirit represented by Effendi Nasreddin might be perceived as dangerous by the Chinese authorities in contemporary Uyghurstan or Xinjiang. And even if this book is available in Beijing today, maybe in some second-hand bookstores, I wonder if it's available in Urumqi, which is the capital of Xinjiang, where there was just a pretty horrific massacre, as some more astute listeners will be aware. And one wonders if today, you know, the irreverent spirit of Effendi Nasreddin might not be taken by some Uyghurs as, you know, not the Padishah not representing the old warlords, who nobody even remembers today anyway, you know, almost three generations later, but representing the current Chinese Communist authorities. One wonders, an interesting question. We'll have more to say about this later. I should mention now that it's 12:28, that is to say, 2 minutes of 12:30, on listener-supported, non-commercial WBAI 99.5 FM in the AM in the morning. Here in New York City. The name of this show is the Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade, and my name is Bill Weinberg. We were supposed to be doing something else tonight, but this is what we're doing instead. Should I talk a little bit about what we were supposed to be doing tonight, or should I play more from Mahmer? All right. Let me talk a little bit about what we were supposed to be doing tonight. All right, let's take a little break and do that, and then we'll get back on to the Uyghur tip. Because I know some of you were waiting with bated breath for the great debate, which I was hoping to host between representatives of the, to oversimplify somewhat, two factions on the WBAI local station board. Now, certain of their representatives are barred from speaking over the air because they're running for the board. So we're still trying to work it out. It didn't happen for this week. I'm still hoping that it's going to happen for next week. So with any luck, over the course of the next 7 days, we'll figure out who in fact can come into the studio and represent. And I'm not going to mention any names, but the four figures from, that is to say, two from each faction, each of the two factions, to oversimplify somewhat, who I invited. If you're listening tonight, I appeal to you to let's really make an effort over the course of the next 7 days to come to consensus amongst ourselves as to who, in fact, can speak freely on the air. And I am going to email Les Radke and Ethan Young, respectively, the national and local election supervisors, about this matter. And hopefully we can arrive at some clarity, and 1 week from tonight, we can indeed proceed with our debate. Meanwhile, just one thing I want to say on the BAI tip, and just over the course of the past week, I've had some very unpleasant experiences with, tellingly, once again, people on either side of the factional divide who have made it very, very clear through their actions that they do not mean me or the Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade any good. Have pretty much attacked me in no uncertain terms. I'm not going to get into the details, but not only through flames, but through actual actions. And tellingly, once again, it's people on either side, right? So I know that the hardcore dogmatists on either side accuse me of fence straddling or equivocating or of being an agent for the other side or of being a coward, because my perception is, and I'm quite sure that it's an accurate perception at that, that there has been completely unprincipled, thuggish behavior and sleazy making alliances with the devil on either side of the factional divide. So if you want to win me over to your camp, I suggest that instead of, baiting me as an agent for the other side or baiting me as a coward, that you clean up your act and start doing something to earn my respect by opposing the totalitarians and sleazy operatives within your own camp who are demonstrating through their behavior that they have nothing but contempt for free speech and the democratic process. And those of you who are not interested, and again, I'm speaking to people on both sides, they know who they are. Those of you who are not interested in earning my respect or winning me over to your camp, but wish to silence me, bring it on. Bring it on. My philosophy has always been that I do each show as if it were my last, that there's no point in doing a radio show at all if I'm going to engage in self-censorship, that it's not free speech radio if you don't exercise free speech. So I welcome the vindication of being censored. Bring it on. The last thing I will have to say in that regard, and I'm not speaking to everybody on the LSB or everybody in either camp. I am speaking to the people who have demonstrated through their actions that they wish to silence me. I quote from Chairman Mao, "It is good to be attacked by the enemy, since this proves that we have drawn a clear line of demarcation between the enemy and ourselves." Thank you, Chairman. Once again, bring it on. All right. Let's see. Should we talk a little bit about what's going on with the Uyghurs? You know what? Before we do, let's hear the next song from Mahmer and his album Eagle. And I'm going to read one more tale from The Effendi and the Pregnant Pot, Uyghur Folktales from China. And this next one, which I'm going to read, is very much akin to the last one I read, The Gold Plant. It's really just a variation of the same story, in fact, except that it uses a dirty word. It uses one of the seven dirty words, but it's right in this book, which was published in China in 1983. So I'm going to read it in the name of literary authenticity. So be forewarned that the next story which I'm about to read uses one of the seven dirty words. Once again, in the spirit of free speech, if you don't want to hear it, you got 2 minutes and 50 seconds to turn off your radio while we listen to the next cut, this one entitled Celebration, featuring Bella Fleck from Mahmer. 1, 2, 3, 4.
following literary reading contains frank language. If you feel you may be offended by such language, please tune away and rejoin us in approximately 5 minutes.
Thank you, Max. And with that, the tale of the money-shitting donkey. Once the Effendi Nasreddin rode his donkey to the palace of the Padishah. Just before he reached the gate, he secretly pushed 3 gold coins into the donkey's anus. When he came before the Padishah, the Effendi announced, "My donkey doesn't shit turds, but golden coins, shadow of Allah. If you don't believe it, look." The astounded Padishah opened his eyes wide and could not take them off the donkey's rear end. After a while, the donkey lifted its tail, pushed to relieve itself, and 3 golden coins fell on the floor. "Then it's true," shouted the Padishah. "The money-shitting donkey really does exist." He was beside himself with excitement and immediately ordered wine, food, and many dishes brought before the Effendi. He even set the table himself. After the Effendi had eaten and drunk his full, the Padishah said, "My dear, dear Nasreddin, I pray you to sell me your donkey. I will pay you 100 times more than it's worth." "Your Majesty, such a beautiful beast must, of course, belong to the Padishah," said the Effendi. "Give me the money and take the donkey." And the Effendi went away. The Padishah, delirious with happiness, ordered a splendid velvet rug for the donkey to rest on. Then he called his favorite concubine, his son the prince, the nobles, the high officials, and even the servants, in short, everyone in the palace, so they could see the wonderful money-shitting donkey. They waited a long time. Finally, the donkey began switching his tail. The sovereign jubilantly jumped down from his throne and shouted, "My golden coins! Quick, look, they're going to come out!" But when the donkey stopped moving its tail, there were only 3 ordinary turds steaming on the Padishah's beautiful velvet rug. Yippee! 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 Effendi Nasreddin. All right. Well, we have at least 2 more of these tales to read. But before we do, let's take the opportunity to talk about the contemporary Uyghur struggle, moving from the amusing to the, unfortunately, not so amusing, and in fact, rather grim. Before we go there, you know what we're going to do? We're going to hear one more from Mamer. And then we'll talk about why we are paying homage to the Uyghurs tonight and to their folk hero, Effendi Nasreddin. All right, let's hear one more from Mamer. Whoops. 5. Here we go.
Сидей, қызығым қолмен бөлсе дей, қызығым. Жанына қылыш ұрсадай, қалжырап көңіл қарайып, қарауды көзі тұрсадай. Жақындаба жал тұрсадай, жанына қылыш ұрсадай, қалжырап көңіл қарайып, қарауды көзі тұрсадай. Үмітін қоймаса адамзат ей, үмітін қоймаса адамзат, үмітін қоймаса адамзат. Өмірдің қоймас адамзат, 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 өмірдің қоймас адамзат.
Right. Thank you, Mahmer. And I do hope that all of Mahmer's friends and family back in Xinjiang are okay, because people who follow the news will be aware that approximately 200 people were killed in Urumqi, the capital of Xinjiang, on July 10th. It's unclear what happened because of the extremely draconian control of the media in China, but apparently some days earlier, 2,000 miles away from Xinjiang in Guangdong province, there was what can only be called a pogrom against some Uyghur migrant workers at a factory in the town of Shaoguan, if I'm pronouncing it correctly, where apparently some Uyghurs were accused of a rape and were attacked en masse by the Han Chinese workers at the factory, and two were killed. And they were just going at each other with factory implements. Very, very ugly episode. So in response to this, Uyghurs held a protest in Urumqi on July 10th, demanding justice in the case, demanding, you know, a real investigation into these two Uyghurs who were killed in Guangdong. What happened is not entirely clear. By the time it was over, at least 190 people were dead, possibly many more. The official death toll is 192. Just recently, the Chinese authorities have given a figure for the number of those who were killed by the security forces, 12. But Uyghurs believe that the number is, in fact, much, much higher than that, and that, in fact, the security forces opened fire on the march, which is what precipitated the violence, which continued for another 48 hours. In any event, there was repression of the march. There was police repression of the march. Uncertain if it's really as dramatic as some people are saying, and that the police opened fire on the march, and perhaps scores or even hundreds of Uyghur protesters were killed. This apparently is the scuttlebutt which is going around on the streets of Urumqi in the Uyghur districts now. We don't know if it's true or not. Clearly, there was police repression of the march. And in response, the protesters, what had been a peaceful march turned into a riot. And a lot of Han Chinese shops were attacked. You know, it's the typical situation, as in Tibet, where, you know, the Uyghurs are fast becoming minorities in their homeland. I think that in the city of Urumqi, they may already be a minority, if not well on their way to being a minority. Probably not in Xinjiang as a whole, because it's a vast territory, very sparsely populated, very arid. But they've essentially, you know, been colonized in their homeland. So there's obviously been all of this ethnic tension, which has been brewing for a long time, which exploded. Once again, a lot of Han Chinese owned shops were ransacked. In response to this, Han Chinese vigilantes took to the streets and started attacking Uyghurs. And by the time it was all over, at least 200 were dead over the course of around 48 hours. And the exact details of how many are dead and who they are and who did the killing is very, very difficult to ascertain. But the city continues to be occupied by the army. Very, very stringent controls on the press. The authorities have been particularly attempting to prevent people from gathering at the mosques. They tried to, the Friday after July 10th, they attempted to bar Muslim prayers, traditional Friday evening prayers, from taking place at the mosques. They tried to close the mosques, but huge crowds gathered at the mosques, and the police were rapidly outnumbered. And rather than risk another violent conflagration, they withdrew and allowed the prayers to proceed. And let's see, the government of Turkey, which is, you know, sees itself as the protector of the Uyghurs, who are, you know, who are a Turkic people, is saying that the Chinese state is committing genocide against the Uyghurs, and they're demanding an international investigation. Interestingly, you know, the Uyghur exile establishments are, based mostly in the U.S. and Europe. They're not employing this kind of rhetoric. They're not saying that it was genocide, but they are saying that that the incident needs to be independently investigated. And what's very interesting is that there's been a certain amount of dissent which has emerged within intellectual circles in Beijing. A very interesting story, which I cite on my website, World War IV Report. You can we link to it in the entry for tonight's show on the radio show's website, mork.info. This is from a Radio Free Asia account. Yes, that is ostensibly independent organization, which does get money from the U.S. State Department. Nonetheless, I would assume that the facts check out. This was also reported elsewhere in the there was a mention of it in the New York Times. Chinese writer Wang Lixiang, if I'm pronouncing his name correctly, and his wife, the Tibetan writer Wozer, have launched an online campaign calling for the release of Uyghur economist Ilam Toti, a professor at Beijing's Central Nationalities University. Toti went missing after he reported police had summoned him from his Beijing home following the riots in Urumqi. Wang published his petition on the internet July 12th and has collected more than 250 cyber signatures, mostly from Han Chinese. Beijing-based Wang Lixiang is best known for his novel Tianzang, or Sky Burial, which explores the Tibet question from an unorthodox perspective. Toti was accused of inciting unrest with his blog, Uyghur Online, which you can check out, although it's in Chinese and possibly in the Uyghur language, but I can't read either one, so Doesn't help much. Tochi was accused of inciting unrest with his blog, Uyghur Online. Days before the unrest, he told... days before his arrest, he told Radio Free Asia he was aware the authorities were closely watching him. They are calling me now. I have to go. I may be out of touch for some time, unquote, he said. His website is now apparently being blocked in China. Wozer said the call for Toti's release has generated a response from Chinese of several different ethnicities. Quote, Wang Lixiang is a Han Chinese and I am Tibetan. The people who signed the letter include other minorities such as Hui, Mongolian, Korean, and others, Wozer told Radio Free Asia. The appeal is not limited to one or two peoples. It is hoped that there will be a better future for all peoples. Well, the reason I read this account is once again, you know, I mean, I understand that a lot of people are going to reject anything which comes from Radio Free Asia, but, you know, we shouldn't let the fact that, U.S. imperialism and its propaganda organs are going to make hay off of what's happening in China blind us to the fact that there could be useful information there. You know, I mean, similarly, you can imagine that lots of lurid accounts about very real poverty and oppression in the United States are reported in the Chinese media for equally cynical reasons, right? So I find this account very, very interesting. Because it sort of shows, well, for starters, it's a glimmer of hope, right? That there actually is, you know, a somewhat enlightened and universalist element, at least in intellectual circles in Beijing, and one hopes elsewhere in China, which has not been, you know, swept up into this ugly ethnic groupthink. And that there actually are Han Chinese who are willing to extend solidarity to the Uyghurs. And also because it sort of illustrates what the limits of permissible dissent are and how the system of repression works, at least within intellectual circles in Beijing. Now, obviously, it's different out in the hinterlands of Xinjiang, we can be certain. Or Tibet or Sichuan, but at least in intellectual circles in Beijing, you know, academic circles in Beijing, where, you know, China puts forth its global face to the world, it's bad that Ilan Tochi has been arrested, and certainly we should demand his release. But it's good, at least, that Wang Lixiang, I hope I'm pronouncing his name correctly, and his wife, Wozer, I hope I'm pronouncing her name correctly, have been able, it seems, to protest the arrest of Tochi without themselves being arrested or harassed or persecuted. So I'm going to continue to watch this very, very closely, and I will have... reports back on this radio show in the weeks to come. And since it is 1 minute of 1 o'clock in the morning on listener-supported non-commercial WBAI 99.5 FM here in New York City, I should mention that this radio show is the Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade. With me, Bill Weinberg, the resident member of the collective and senior ranter, the other members of the collective are on rather elongated sabbatical, but we'll be back perhaps sooner than you think. So, I don't want to see China explode into ethnic warfare. But I also understand that, there's no justice. There's no peace without justice. So I hope that progressives in the West can rise above the global divide and conquer trip, which is the essence of the state system and join Wang Lixiang in extending some solidarity to the Uyghurs. With that, let's hear a little bit more from our friend Mahmer. And once again, I hope I'm pronouncing his name correctly, and I hope that his friends and family back in Xinjiang have fared well in the recent unfortunate paroxysm of violence there. Song actually must segue into the next one. A little abrupt ending there. Never mind. That's all right. Here, let's hear the tale of the governor of the donkeys. The Padishah wanted to humiliate the effendi, So one day he called into the palace, and in front of all the ministers, he assumed a very solemn air and pronounced, "Today I make a great announcement. I hereby confer on Nasreddin the title of governor of all the donkeys in the town." The ministers began to laugh. The effendi arose, made an elaborate bow, and then, with the greatest indifference, passed in front of the padisha and went to sit on the canopy of the throne above the padisha's head. "What impudence!" yelled the padisha. "How do you dare sit higher than I? Come down from there at once!" Most regally, the effendi raised his hands for calm. Then he said to the padisha and the ministers, "Whoa there! Silence! A little respect! Am I or am I not your governor?" Okay, all right. So, let's see, one announcement. In the anarchist spirit of Effendi Nasreddin, it's going to be music in Tompkins Square. It's going to be the brought to you by the Lower East Side's sporadical radical underground newspaper, The Shadow. It's going to be the 80s punk show, legendary old school punk with Reagan Youth, Urban Waste, The Nihilistics, Sexual Suicide, Hammer Brain, Mongrel Bitch, The Rapid Deployment Force, Jennifer Blowdryer, Will Sales, and others. It's going to be happening this Saturday, July 25th, in Tompkins Square Park. So if you're in the hood, drop by. Maybe I'll see you there. That's it for announcements. Let's see. Shall we read another? Yeah, okay. Here's here's the title story from The Effendi and the Pregnant Pot, Uyghur Folktales from China, translated by Primrose Giglesi, New World Press, Beijing, China, 1983. The story of the pregnant pot. If you've been paying attention, you'll see that there's a common theme to many of these stories. They're really different versions of the same story, but they're all amusing. Once the Effendi borrowed a pot from a great lord. A few days later, the Effendi put a smaller one inside and returned it. The lord was very satisfied because, after all, he was gaining something. Nevertheless, finding the fact rather odd, he asked, "Nasreddin, how is it that inside my pot there is a smaller one?" "Sir," said the Effendi, "you probably didn't notice it, but the pot you loaned me was pregnant. 2 days later, it gave birth to a little pot in my house. Therefore, today, I have brought back the mother and the baby." "All right," said the lord, grabbing the mother and child. "From now on, you can take all the pots you need, so long as you give them back to me." A few days later, the Effendi came back to the lord and told him that he had many guests and needed a very big pot. The lord, just waiting for such a thing, eagerly gave him the biggest and best one in the house. A week went by, another week, then almost a month, but the Effendi did not come back. The lord began to worry. Just as he was ready to go to the Effendi's house, the Effendi appeared, his eyes filled with tears. "Alas, my lord," he said, "2 days later, your pot died at my house. At first I thought I would wait for the ritual 40 days to pass before telling you, but I was afraid you could not wait any more, so here I am." "Nonsense," cried the lord. "Don't you make jokes at my expense. The pot is iron. How can it die?" "Sir," answered the Effendi, "if a pot can give birth, surely it can die." I think we sort of heard a different variation on the same punchline, didn't we?
Thank you.
or female. The Padishah's favorite concubine was pregnant, and he sent for the Effendi to ask him if the child would be male or female. Female was the answer. But what do you think? Is a male or female better? Asked the Padishah. Male or female, it's the same. It's always a person, the Effendi replied. Nonsense, exclaimed the Padishah. Women aren't worth anything. I want a male, so that later he will be able to take my place at the palace. Oh, that's your problem, your majesty. Relax. If your place remains vacant, the people won't worry a bit.
Құс болсаң жібектен бау тағар едім, күмістен тұғырыңды жабар едім. Мойның ассар алтыннан алқа тағы, қолға алып сылап сипап бағар едім. Салайын мен әнімде қара торғай, қара торғай, қалада күдейдіу, қалада күдейдіу. Салайын мен әнімде қара торғай, қара торғай, қалада күдейдіу, қалада күдейдіу. Айдалу жаныма, айдалу жанар бүгін бейіштің гүл жамылған сарайында сайраған тоту құстай сен бір бұлбұл салайын мен әнімде қара торғай қара торғай қалада күдейдіу қалада күдейді дейді салайын мен әнім қара торғай, қара торғай, қалада күдейдіу, қалада күдейдіу. Айдалу жаныма, айдалу. Жібектен бау тағар едім, күмістен тұғырыңды жабар едім. Мойның ассар алтыннан алқа тағы, қолға алып сылап сипап бағар едім. Салайын мен әнімде қара торғай, қара торғай, қалада күдейдіу, қалада күдейдіу. Салайын мен әнімде қара торғай, қара торғай, қалада күдейдіу, қалада күдейдіу. Айдалу жаныма,
The Lazy Fellow and the Donkey. In the town, there lived a man who was extremely lazy, so lazy that he wouldn't even walk fast. One day, he decided to go to the bazaar, so he went to the Effendi's house to ask if he could borrow his donkey. The Effendi said, "My friend, if you walk a little faster, you can get to the bazaar just by walking. Besides, my donkey is not here." Just then, however, the donkey started to bray. The man's face brightened, and with a big smile, he said, "You hear that? Your donkey is telling me that he is here." "I really pity you," the Effendi said. "You are so lazy you cannot even think. You do not believe a respected man with a beard, such as mine, and yet you accept what a donkey says." The Effendi shut the door.
Atimiz yavmiz yavdan da ba yavmiz 15 günde jürgünü dey 15 jakka yeyta yavmiz
Beautiful. The last tale I'm going to read tonight is entitled, appropriately enough, The Debate, given that this program was supposed to be, and maybe next week will be, a debate about the situation here at WBAI. And I'm going to hope that the tale which I am about to read is not going to be a reflection of the debate, which hopefully is actually going to take place over these airwaves one week from tonight. The debate. The Potty Shah believed himself to be a fountain of intelligence, and the thing that amused him most was to embarrass people with complicated questions. Once he had 12,000 scholars from all over the empire come to the palace and ask them where the center of the world was. Naturally, no one knew the answer. The Potty Shah was jubilant. His satisfaction was so great that he had an edict proclaimed throughout the city, promising a fortune to the one who could answer the question. The proclamation also added, whoever answers it wrong will be put to death. A curious crowd gathered at the square, but after they had heard the edict, they all went away shaking their heads. The effendi, however, got on the back of his donkey and went to the palace of the Potty Shah. He entered the courtyard, pulling his donkey, and asked to be received by the Potty Shah. What? Exclaimed the Potty Shah. You know where the center of the world is? Yes, Your Majesty, was the effendi's answer. The center of the world is exactly under the hoof of the back left leg of my donkey. Imbecile! If you do not believe it, you get the world and measure it. If I am wrong, you cut off my head. But that's... The Potty Shah paused, then said, oh, never mind. I'll ask you another question. How many stars are there in the sky? How many stars are there in the sky? The effendi thought a bit and then answered, first of all, it is necessary to state that there are neither few nor many. Then, that there are exactly as many as the hairs in your beard. What nonsense! It's right, Your Majesty, 100% right. If you do not believe it, you climb up in the sky and count them yourself. If there is even one less, I am ready to pay with my life. But then, how many hairs are there in my beard? Quick, answer that! The effendi lifted the tail of his donkey, and with his right hand, and then at the same time, pointed the index finger of his left hand at the chin of the Potty Shah, then solemnly stated, the hairs of your beard are exactly as many as the hairs in this tail. The Potty Shah banged his fist on the table, and yelled, wrong! Very wrong! Your Majesty, before you say whether it is right or wrong, count the hairs of your beard first, then count the hairs of my donkey's tail. Enough! Suddenly, the Potty Shah didn't have the courage to say another word. And there, that's my answer to all of those wise fools who are tearing WBAI apart. Actually, you know, it's kind of, it's the opposite. The Potty Shah is not a wise fool. Nasruddin is a wise fool. And the Potty Shah is a foolish wise man. And see, it's an important distinction, actually. Let's hear a little bit more from Mahmer, and then we have to be out of here.
Барасын сырдың бойын көбелеп мен ардыңнан жетейін тұлпарымды жебелеп кере қайда барасын сырдың бойын көбелеп мен ардыңнан жетейін тұлпарымды жебелеп
оу сырдың бойын көбелеп, мен артыңнан жетейін тұлпарымды жебелеп. Кере қайда барасың сырдың бойын көбелеп, ен талдыңнан шығайын қар жаңбыр жай себелеп.
Remember that this program is supported by the listener members of WBAI New York. If you like what you hear, please consider becoming a member of WBAI or renewing if you've already joined. Basic membership is $25, but we accept any amount. Help us keep free speech alive.